The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Okay, now I got to ask, are you doing this to me on purpose? I got a show all planned out here. I haven't heard about this Seattle school thing until your newscast. And now I got to lead off with breaking news. And are you doing this just to mess with me on a daily basis?
No, I'm doing it because I want to make sure our listeners and our audience get to hear the very latest.
Oh, they're going to hear the very latest. But I don't have time to prepare for this stuff when I just hear about it from you right before I go on the air. And I've been thinking about this a lot because all of our top stories that I was planning on doing before I heard the breaking news I'll get into in just a second here. By the way, we're coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studios and streaming on Facebook Live as we begin the big show. But I've told you my strategy for life, my approach to life. I get everything out of my system between noon and 3, and then I'm a fairly mellow fellow between 3 p.m. and noon the next day. It's hectic. You know, I'm scrambling to put together the next show, but I don't get consumed. I'm not a hateful person.
No.
Can we agree on that?
We can agree.
Thank you. I appreciate
that. You just get very passionate between noon and three.
I get it all out of my system. But I don't sit on my computer sending angry tweets and hateful stuff to anybody who disagrees with me. I get it all out of my system. And then the rest of my life, I try to be happy. I'm very blessed. I have a wonderful family. I've got, I just got a lot of good things going on.
So what in particular about my newscast got you riled up?
Well, here's the thing. It's not just your news story about the Seattle schools, but it's everything that's going on in our region. And I'm wondering if noon to three isn't enough. I wonder if I need to start getting more consumed the rest of my day, but that'll destroy me. That'll eat me up. It'll consume me. And I can't do that. I have to stay somewhat compartmentalized because I've seen all the people around here who are just filled with rage and hate every second of their life.
So you're telling us that it's going to be even more intense now from noon to three?
Yes. Yes, that's exactly what I'm telling you, because the only other option is to just sit and watch our entire region go down the tubes. And I really don't want that. But, okay, let's start with the breaking news that just came in.
The Big Lead. Breaking news.
Okay, so what are these kids upset about? There's going to be some teacher cuts.
Yes. So they are saying that the student that we spoke with from Nova High School mm-hmm. says that their school is going to be hit especially hard, but there are going to be 33 teacher positions that are cut.
District-wide.
Yes.
And at this Nova school,
Seattle
they're going to lose
district.
Two teachers, which, as I've been telling you for weeks and weeks and weeks, is absolutely inevitable because the massive raises that the teachers have been given are not financially viable. They are absolutely not sustainable. So in the Seattle schools, where it was comparatively modest, the teacher raises, it was about 10% raise, but some districts are giving 20% and more. And the money for that is not there. So inevitably, there are going to be teachers who are cut, or you and I are going to face another massive tax increase. We've already gotten a massive increase. If you pay property taxes, you've seen increases in some cases of $1,000, $2,000 on your property taxes just for the schools. And we're either going to have to face another massive tax hike or they're going to have to cut teachers. So Kashama Sawant is riling up the kids who are easily manipulatable these days. So she is instructing her little cultists to walk out of school tomorrow. Do we know when? When's the walkout planned for?
Noon.
Noon tomorrow.
And I want to tell you one. So after you go through what
my spiel.
Yes, I will tell you that the district has just responded.
Oh,
now.
Well, yeah. Do you want to tell me now?
Well, basically, they're saying that nobody is losing their job at Seattle Public Schools. So
what's SWAT talking about?
Yeah, so, and she had came up with a total of 33 teachers are going to be displaced from their jobs. That was according to her email. Now the district is responding.
Okay, look, SWAT, all she's trying to do, she's trying to stake out her position. She doesn't want to be a Seattle City Council person. She wants a national platform. She's probably not going to run again. She wants to be the country's socialist leader. So she's got to show that she can, you know, rile up her cult. And so, and by the way, what a cult of personality, because with her as leader, who wouldn't be enchanted and entranced by Sawant's mellifluous words? So here's one of the kids who says that at the Nova school, they are going to get rid of two teachers.
And the number of teachers they're moving is too much for us to handle. They're moving two teachers from our school, 10 total at the high school level, and Nova's pretty small, so two teachers is a sixth of our staff.
Okay, and so Seattle Public Schools say nobody's losing their job. Maybe Sawant says they're moving them from one school to another. But this whole walkout thing.
Nova's pretty small, so two teachers is a sixth of our staff. That would mean a loss of a sixth of our classes, and that's too much. That would harm students.
Okay, and here's another kid that they talked to.
Schools that cater to LGBTQ kids. They're schools that cater to kids who don't speak English as a first language. They're largely schools made up of a populace of marginalized students. And that's why we're doing this, because this is entirely not okay.
Okay. Well, it's not just partially not okay. It's entirely not okay. Look, what a load of nonsense. Like the Seattle Public Schools, she says, oh, they're going to discriminate against the schools that have LGBT kids and ESL kids. That is such a load of crap, because we know that the Seattle Public Schools bend over backwards for any student in what they call a marginalized population. They take an incredibly disproportionate share of the budget, of the resources, of the energy. SWAT's got to make everyone feel like a victim. That's the way that you get people mobilized. You tell everybody they're a victim, which, by the way, is a really crappy way to go through life. Not thinking you have any control. If you don't have the great Sawant looking out for you, then you're just going to be a victim your whole life. And why even try? So we'll just band together and we'll paint some signs and we'll walk out of school at noon tomorrow. But this load of nonsense that the Seattle schools are going to disproportionately affect LGBT and ESL kids, that is absolute nonsense, because I'm telling you, the amount of energy and emotion and budget that goes into those populations is far out of whack with their actual representation. So that's just nonsense. But they've been taught, you're a victim. You have to feel like a victim. You have to express all the time that you're a victim.
And the district now, just in reading their statement, they're saying that the reason that there are changes in their staffing is because there's been a drop in overall student enrollment. And specifically for the school Nova, they said they should have had nearly 3 full-time equivalent positions pulled based on their student enrollment counts, but they were able to mitigate it, and they're losing 2.
Well, yeah. If your enrollment is down, it's kind of like I just saw in the Highline schools. And Highline in Burien has just gone down the toilet, and there's gang wars and murders. And I saw that Highline High School, that they're going to cut, oh gosh, I don't have it in front of me because I didn't know I was going to talk about this. But I think they're cutting 15 teachers because their enrollment is down 700 kids from what they projected. And I'm guessing it's because families have decided, with the gang wars that are going on, that we can't send our kid to this public school that is just riddled with gangs. And so they're going to lose a bunch of teachers. And I don't know where they're going. I don't know if they're going to other public schools. Seattle Christian is down there. Maybe they're going private schools.
Yeah, they said in Highline, as you just mentioned, 700 students fewer than projected. So they were going to be losing $3.5 million in revenue, cutting 15 teachers.
50, yeah. Okay, I did get that right. It pays off to read. I read a lot preparing for the show, even if I don't know I'm going to be talking about something. So yeah, if you are down in student population, of course you're going to move teachers. And here's Emerson Johnson with the socialist students.
And when Nova students learned that they were going to be impacted by the proposed teacher displacements, we knew that we had to get involved and help these students who are facing these egregious cuts.
Egregious cuts. Two teachers because enrollment is way down. And that's an egregious cut. Very good job. Sawant, nice job. We got to make sure everybody's a victim. We have to make sure that everybody knows that they have no control over their life, that they have to have politicians like you who are teaching them that the only way to navigate through life is to rely on the government. Because heaven forbid kids grow up with any sense of self-sufficiency. Yeah, that's all bonus material. I didn't know I was going to talk about that. But Seattle school walkout noon tomorrow. Ooh, that's going to be a loss for those kids to lose out on one day of that outstanding education that they're getting in the Seattle schools. But at least they can listen to Sawant prattle on a bullhorn for an hour or two. That'll fill their little sponge-like minds. Next up, in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
That's such a sad email this weekend from listener Katie. It's always nice. It always guarantees I'll read the rest of the email if you suck up at the beginning. Dory, first I would like to say I love you. I love you too, Katie. Your show gives me some company during the day while my kids are at school. I've been a faithful listener for 13 years. I wanted to take a moment and share how grieved I am with the loss of the Judd and Black appliance store in Everett. It's been a part of the Everett community for decades, but just like everything else in this area, it's been burned to the ground by the homeless. After 75 years of being a pillar in Everett, it's been destroyed by tweakers in their reckless behavior. They just don't care what they do or who they do it to. I'm so tired of it. When are these liberals going to wake up and realize we need to get these people out of here? I could go on, but I have my family to tend to. Unlike the strung-out addicts, I actually care about others. And if you had not heard the story, the Judd and Black building, it's right at the western end of Highway 2, there in Everett, and it's just a wonderful historic building. It was built 130 years ago. It was built before City of Everett became a city, and there was a massive fire there on Saturday, and the place is destroyed, and the Judd and Black families that started the store back in the 1940s, in this era where retailers are trying to compete with the internet and certainly with the bigger corporate box stores, the fact that they've carved out an appliance company that, you know, goes from the Puget Sound area up to the Canadian border, it's impressive. And I love these companies that have found ways to survive and thrive in these toughest of times. And we do not know. I should say, in response to Katie's email, we called Everett Fire today. We've tried to get some confirmation that it was indeed tweakers. All we know is that there is a park near that store that has a homeless encampment that does have tweakers there. And we're waiting to hear back from the fire investigators if that's how and why it burned down. So we do not know the answer to that. What I do know is that it is yet another example of a part of our history and a part of our very soul as a region. I mean, these family-owned businesses, these are the people who have created the jobs, provided the tax revenues, who have found a way in really tough times for retail, who have found a way to just make it through. And if it is proven that it was the neighborhood encampment that's the reason that this historic 100-year-old building burned down on Saturday, it would be another damning indictment. And I will remind you, Snohomish County a few months ago legalized all drugs, heroin, meth, crack, you name it. It's legal as long as you have small amounts. They said that it's going to make things better. King County, 2 weeks ago, I had Dan Satterberg, the King County prosecutor, on the show. He said that King County is doing the same thing. If you have a gram or less, then you will not be prosecuted. So it is a de facto legalization. He said that will make things better. Hey, when does the it gets better actually happen? When are we going to see the manifestation of our whacked out policies towards drugs? Channel 4, ComoNews.com, talked with Kamate Mamadou, an appliance store owner right across the street from this Judd and Black store.
I'm very concerned. This place, if they're not in business, I don't know how long I will stay here, because they refer me a good customers many times. Without a Judd and Black around this neighborhood, I don't think I'm going to last longer.
And Everett Fire says the building is a total loss.
The structure, until it comes down, is still going to be a danger because there's walls that are up that aren't being supported.
And a resident in Everett says that it is heartbreaking to lose a business like this.
It's really hard to even watch it burn. It's not just an appliance store. These people were they were like family. Everyone never is talking about it. You go into the local grocery store and Judd and Black burnt down last night, you know.
Yeah, we're just destroying the region. We're cutting out the heart and soul. We're burning the heart and soul to the ground so that we can become the drug capital of America. And I'll talk more about this a little bit later in the show, but Mayor Durkin over the reason announced her new budget that includes $1.3 million for heroin death sites. Yeah, let's bring more addicts around the country to our region. It's working out really, really well. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Woo! We need some fun and games. We need a little distraction. Brock Huard is the Monday Monson quarterback. Big win for the Seahawks yesterday. Earl Thomas, though. What is going on there? We'll talk with Brock about that and much more straight ahead as the Dory Monson Show gets rolling on this Monday afternoon.
Monday Monson quarterback.
Blue in it, check. Brown 24 Razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Where the 12s hear the Hawks.
He's going to drop the ball underneath. The ball is caught. It's Jimmy Graham. And that was all Russell Wilson.
Here's Dory Monson.
Well, that was more like it. Seahawks get their first win of the season. And as always on Monday afternoons, Brock Huard and his partner Mike Salk, they had the first conversation with Pete on Monday morning. And Brock Huard joins us for the Monday Monson quarterback from the VMAC. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Dory. But for the first time this year, we got to chat with him after a win.
Yeah.
After a win. And coach was great the last couple weeks. I think he's been in a really good place. He loves his team and so many of the kind of cast of characters. He always, you know, falls in love with what they do and doesn't focus on what they don't do. But, man, that was a formula game. That was, as it turns out, what, 39 rushing attempts, 16 passes, getting to that 55 number. That means win for the Seahawks.
I tell you, I watched Bill Belichick's post-game press conference yesterday. What a jerk that guy is. I mean, every answer was two words, yeah, we got to do better. And he just treats the media with such disrespect. And I know he's the greatest coach of all time, but it sure makes me appreciate the opportunity that you get on Mondays and that I get on Fridays to talk with somebody who actually doesn't seem to hate us.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. He's a coach, Dory. I would put Bill Belichick in that just coach, and that's what a lot of coaches do. Maybe not as many collegiately, but you still find some of those because they can.
Yeah.
But he's not a manager of people, you know, and that's what they say always about baseball guys. They're not coaches. They're managers because they have to manage people. Bill Belichick uses and abuses people. He doesn't manage them. Pete Carroll is 180 the other way. He looks to not only coach, but he also knows how to manage, and he's managing an awful lot right now.
Yes, he is. Okay, I don't know if you heard our pregame show. We made a little bit of news because Cam Chancellor raised the 12 flag. And first of all, he talked about just how hard it is for him to sit on the sideline. He's still, you know, primetime guy, 30 years old, would have several years left, but because of a neck injury, he's sidelined for good.
It feels kind of strange sometimes just watching the guys go out there and battle and just fight. And, you know, that's something I just was raised in for 22 years. So it's just an out-of-body experience for me and that I got to get used to.
And where we made a little news, Brock, was it was the first time he's really talked to the media since the injury, since the retirement, and it was the first time we got really a description of that career-ending injury.
Spinal stenosis, so it's a buildup of calcification behind my spinal cord, behind my C2, C3 vertebrae, and it's pushing into my spinal cord every time I jam my head forward. And I also have bone spurs that's on my C4, C5, C2, and C3.
Oh, wow.
So it's just all of wear and tear and just build up of just ickiness in my neck right now. And it all affects me. If I bump my head, I just lose all my feeling.
Gotcha.
And, man, Pete Carroll talked with you, Brock, about his emotion as he watched Cam raise the 12 flag.
I sent him a note last night. I've watched a lot of those, you know, ceremonies, you know, of the flag raising and all that. That one got me, man. That hit me right in the heart. I was emotional. I'm glad nobody saw it. I was all choked up about it, you know. And such a relationship with such a great kid and a great player. It's not the player. It's really him, you know. And he's up there going, giving everything he got, just like he always does. It was a beautiful thing.
As we were talking to him, Brock, you know, you just feel his presence and you realize how much a guy like that is missed.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. And then you add in this season, the loss of KJ and Bobby as well. And man, you felt Bobby's presence yesterday just in the middle of it. But yeah, Cam is a unique one. You know, we've chatted with John Schneider about this. We did in the preseason. And he's like, it's hard. You want to find the next 6'3", 225-pound guy that just has that kind of will and presence in your word there and impact on the football game. And there's just not many of them.
Yeah, they
you
don't
just
grow
don't find
on
them
trees.
In the college game. No, yeah. They don't grow on trees at all.
Yeah. All right. The big storyline leading up to the game and then during and after the game, man, Earl Thomas, who, you know, had two interceptions yesterday.
Dak Prescott again, back in the shotgun. Elliott beside it. First and 10. Stops, looks to the end zone, fires down the middle. Ball tipped up. Ball is intercepted by the Seahawks. Is it not? No. Yes. No. Show me, Mr. Official. Yes. Earl Thomas!
Yeah, his second interception of the game. So he's playing great, but then after the game, he talked about why he sat out a couple of practices leading in.
I need to make sure my body's, you know, 100, and I'm investing in myself. Now, if they was investing in me, I would be out there practicing. But if I feel like anything, I don't give a damn if it's small, I got a headache, I'm not practicing. But I don't want that to be taken the wrong way. I'm not going to get fined. That's just where I'm at with that.
So he's just not going to practice anymore. And what was your take on all of this before you talked to Pete this morning?
I'm just so torn in so many ways. You know, he's such a wonderful player. He has a spirit to play. You talk about presence, and it's not the Cam Chancellor bigger than life presence. It is the, oh my gosh, this guy's a psycho ball of energy, and at any time wants to explode and just loves to compete. But I'm torn, Dory, because I'm the son of a coach, and I love, you know, and I know the essence of what practice means. And in this culture, right here, in this building we sit in, it's compete every day. It's not compete on Sunday.
Yeah.
It is compete every day, and that's what this house was built on. So, yeah, conflicted, I think, to say the least.
Well, and I'm sure Pete Carroll is too, and here's a little bit of what Coach said to Brock and Salk this morning.
There's two sides here, and we're just working it out. I mean, there's the business side and there's the ball side, and we're trying to figure it out what's best. It's ongoing and really sincerely ongoing. And I want what's best for Earl, you know, and we're trying to figure that out and how to work this out. So of course we want what's best for the club, and so we're managing it.
Is there much conversation? Like over the course of the week, do you and he spend time talking about it, or is it just say we all understand the situation we're in?
Yes. No. Both. We're just working, you know. So I don't have anything to share with you guys. Really, I don't, and I'm sorry. But you just gotta have to watch what goes on, and we'll work our way through it.
How do you think this is gonna play out, Brock?
He's gonna continue to get fined really heavily. if he doesn't want to practice. And eventually we'll kind of know those spine numbers, what they are, but they're not insignificant. They're a lot of money, and that's the only thing. Pete went on to say consequences. Consequences. We've tried to hammer him a couple different times, and he's like, yeah, just consequences. That, you know, just consequences for your decision. Still, there has to be around here. And you know, we'll see how much of that wall of book Earl wants to continue to have hit. He had seven figures worth in the preseason training camp, and those were not washed away. And I think I can say that pretty definitively and confidently, that those fines that he took and decided to take in training camp, they're going to honor those, much like these fines, and are going to be very heavy if he continues to do this. And he's playing a game that I am unfamiliar in so many ways, Dory. You know, I am very, very unfamiliar. And it's amazing. The ball found him. Right. They say in baseball, like when you make a late game substitution or something, you know, the ball just finds you.
Yeah.
And of course, the ball is just going to twice yesterday bounce in the air, once off a foot, once off Bobby Wagner, right to him. And the ball seems to just find him.
Yeah. I don't know. I just
you would not deal with this. You go back to your coaching days. Right, Dory? You would just be.
You don't practice. You don't play.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I wonder, though, if this team was 2-0, I really do wonder this, if they were 2-0 and found a way late in those games on the road to win, and he pulls these shenanigans last week at practice where he just sits down in the middle of practice and pouts, and his line of, they're not invested in me. What are you talking about, they're not invested in you?
Yeah.
For a decade, they've been nothing but invested in you. And I think truly looking out for your best interest, and they're paying you $500,000 a game. Yeah. Top five safety money. They are invested in you in every way and have been.
Yeah, well, let me play this from his post game, because along the lines of what you were just saying.
I just want to be appreciated. That's it.
You don't think you're appreciated here by this organization?
I mean, just show me, you know.
Show me the appreciation. If you include the signing bonus, he's making $10 million this year. I want my employer to not appreciate me like that.
They took you in the first round. All right. They took you in the first round. You made millions before your deal was up the first time. They ripped it up and paid you the highest money that any safety has made. The safety market's gone soft out there. So you're still making top five safety money every time you play on Sunday. And that direct deposit comes in on Wednesday. It's for over $500,000. Well, after taxes, not quite $500,000, but you're making $8.5 million base salary this year.
Yeah.
But they don't respect me. They do nothing but disrespect me. Right, they're not invested in me. Yeah. I mean, it is just, it's
crazy.
Yeah, it's childish.
It's just crazy. Okay, one last thing. We're kind of tight on time here, but I really enjoyed you sharing with Pete your producer's story this morning. So just quickly give me the background. So USC was playing at Wazoo, and they were just blowing them out in the second quarter.
It was at 47-0. And Kyle Brown, our producer, was hanging over the tunnel. And instead of running another score in, Pete took a knee. And Kyle was incensed.
In the second quarter,
yes.
He's taking a knee. So you shared that story with Pete, and I just loved this.
But it turns out in 2008, Kyle, let me make sure I get this right. You were the coach at USC. You went up to Wazoo and just destroyed them.
I mean, you remember that game at all?
I remember killing Wazoo.
Taking a knee at halftime?
Yes. So as you're running off the field at the end of halftime, it turns out you got into a conversation with an enraged fan on the Wazoo tunnel. Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember the enraged fan. I don't.
Who
remember
was
that.
Mad at you for taking a knee?
Because I had said, "Please kick the field goal, take the points. This is embarrassing." Pete, you sarcastically replied, 3 points, we could have had six, which was accurate.
And then what, Kyle?
And then what did you do, Kyle? You yelled more at him and said he was embarrassing.
That was the lowest of low points in WSU football history. They were in victory formation in the second quarter. Some thought it was out of respect. I took it as disrespect.
Well, I like that, Kyle. I'm really glad to hear that now. I mean, I love that you felt that way. I did not mean it in disrespect. I did not mean it that way. I didn't know what else to do. That was terrible. God, I didn't know what to do. So we just, let's take a knee. Screw it. Let's get out of here.
Screw it. Let's get out of here.
Beautiful.
That's great.
Beautiful. Those college stories, those college days, man, they never quite go away. And hopefully days like yesterday don't either, where this team can play to the blueprint of how they're built. And I think having Fluker back and Sweezy and commitment to that run game, Dory, they got enough pieces defensively. Go down to Arizona and win on Sunday, be 2-2, and then be the story. Is I think a 4-0 Rams team is going to come in, and you can really measure yourself up against the best.
Yep, that'll be fun. All right, I'll look forward to talking to you next Monday after that Cardinals game, Brock.
Sounds great, Dory.
All right, Brock Huard is the Monday Monson quarterback. It is brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. And we have lots more to come as the Dory Monson Show
rolls on, rolls on, rolls on, rolls on.
I always love to hear your thoughts on any and all matters. You can reach us on the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. That's 98973. So, you know, I said at the beginning of the show that kind of my philosophy in life is, yes, I will always use this show to watchdog government and to spotlight inefficiencies and to point out the absolute lunacy that surrounds us. But it is my goal always to not let that bring me down, because the things I can control are still far more significant than the things that are out of my control. I am not going to walk around depressed because I'm unhappy with the results of a presidential or gubernatorial election. I'm not going to let that affect, you know, my overall view on life. Control what you can control. Don't let yourself be a victim. And the reason I bring all of this up is I mentioned down in Burien, they have a horrible gang problem. And for the kids and the families that are making horrible decisions when it comes to gang involvement, it can have deadly consequences. You know, they're still looking for whoever murdered those two teenage girls several months ago, 13 and 19 years old. But that was part of this gang war that led to the senseless death of the 51-year-old chiropractic receptionist last week. So it is very possible to be victimized by things that are completely out of your control. But for the most part, we got to just control what we can control. And that means, you know, some kids are sadly getting into gangs, but some kids are controlling their life and their environment. And so I was researching the gang problem and these murders down in Burien, and on their B-Town blog, I saw a little blurb about this kid who is, for his Eagle Scout project, he found a park that had an eroded trail, and his name is Reese McGee, and he wanted to build something that would leave a legacy. He wanted something he could do completely by himself. They have pictures on this blog of him with all of his tools, meticulously laying out this staircase because it's just this dirt, heavily eroding trail. He's building 27 steps with a handrail. This kid goes to Seattle Christian School down there. He said he'd been looking for an Eagle project for over a year, and he said he doesn't use this park frequently, but he passes by it every day, and he consulted with his old elementary school principal. And I thought, you know, we got to spotlight these stories too. You know, we talk about the gangs and the senselessness and the death, but there are kids who are embracing control what you can control. And there are more of these kids than there are the gangbangers. But this is a kid who wanted to leave a bit of a legacy, is using his spare time, not in mindless violence, but doing something for the community. If you're an Eagle Scout, you are a super high achiever with a lot of selflessness. And so as we talk about the senselessness of so many kids' choices, let's also celebrate kids like Reese McGee. Because he does what we all must do. Control what you can control. Fast 15 is next.